What's up, what's up? You are now listening to FY Fly the Podcast, and I'm your host, Hassan Thomas, along with Remy, and we are here to share tools on how millennials can budget, save, invest, and understand student debt and credit to achieve financial freedom. If you're a high school student, college student, or someone who's interested in gaining more financial insight, this podcast is for you.
I'm trying to give me a bag. 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 I'm trying to give me a bag.
What's up, my fly folks out there? How y'all doing? I hope y'all doing all right. Welcome to FY Fly the Podcast. My name is Hassan Thomas, aka CEO Sonny, and I'm here with my brother Remy G. What's up, bro? How you feeling?
What's up? You already know we back at it again, man. Another week. Let's get it.
Yes, sir. Man, here at FY Fly, we like to start off the show with a meaningful quote about money. Y'all know this is a show about financial literacy. And financial literacy at its simplest is understanding not only how to budget your money, but being able how to save and grow your money effectively and efficiently. We want y'all to feel comfortable listening to people talk about money, but most importantly, feeling comfortable enough to talk about money and finances yourself. AG, man, tell us the money quote of the day, bro.
So my money quote of the day comes from James W. Frick, and it goes a little something like this. Don't tell me where your priorities are. Show me where you spend your money, and I'll tell you what they are. Actions speak louder than words. Where we put our energy is where we put our money. Where a person invests is a direct representation of what they value. Like Son said, we only get one chance at life. So why not try to live the best one by being financially literate so you're able to start your journey to financial freedom faster? Ain't no time to waste. Let's get straight to it, CEO.
With that being said, man, let's jump right in. Oh yeah, we're talking about credit today. We're going to be talking about why credit is important, what affects your credit score, and in what ways you can leverage your credit to benefit your life. Let's get active. So I know most of y'all are in the same boat as me. We've always been told to stay away from credit, credit cards, and credit cards are the devil. And I want to let y'all know that is false. We've been told to stay away from credit our whole lives, you know, especially in the minority communities, because every encounter with a credit card or credit was negative. So you're right. Our parents did view credit as negative, but only because of the lack of financial literacy. But that won't be a problem for our generation. I can promise you that. And I look at it like this. If you're not getting money like Pablo or Chapo, you're going to have to get that credit right, bro. Simple as that. In this society we live in, we're judged and categorized by numbers. We have our net worth, social security, phone numbers. It's just the world we live in. Life is a game, baby. You just got to know how to play it. So basically, credit is borrowing money knowing that you have to pay it back later, usually with interest. You can borrow money from different places like banks, credit unions, online lenders, peer-to-peer loans, which is exactly what it sounds like, borrowing money from a peer instead of a bank. P2P loans have become increasingly popular for millennials. So credit can help you pay for whatever you want, but the catch is that money you spend is not free. You will have to pay that money back. So knowing that you have to pay that money back, let's think about this logically. Listen to this, bro. You pull out a loan of $25,000. You now have two choices that you can make with that OPM. You can either spend that money on assets, which will bring in money, like starting or investing back into your own business, real estate, or stocks that pay dividends. Or you can spend money on liabilities, like we did in high school, bro. You know, on shoes, clothes, food, parties, Whataburger. You know, all the stuff subtracting from your $25,000 pot of OPM. Saying all that to say, using credit or other people's money is not negative. If used correctly, it can benefit you in major ways. It's simple. Use that money to bring in more money, not more designer, not more nonsense that we can buy with our own money once we have enough money to buy it three times, as my bro Dior December says. My fault, G-Man. I know I got a little winded there, but credit is no joke. Go ahead and tell the folks listening what can affect your credit score.
Yeah. So the five main things that affect your credit score are payment history, credit utilization, credit history, types of accounts, and new credit inquiries. Payment history accounts for about roughly 35% of your credit score. This report basically tells you if you paid your bills on time or not. And trust me, these bills are not limited and can range anywhere from credit card bills and student loans to mortgage loans and car loans. Now, when you take a look at the amount of debt owed on a credit card, this is known as credit utilization. Basically, this is your ratio for the amount of credit you're using compared to the amount of credit you have left to spend. After a little due diligence, I found out that most credit experts say we should keep our utilization rate under 10%.
Yeah, they say a good rule of thumb is to stay far away from 30% as possible. Anything over that 30% will be knocking major points off your credit score. Hey, bro, how much did you say this account factors into your overall score?
30% of your credit score, so be aware. And not only that, they also look at how long you've had your credit account open. The longer you keep a healthy account open, the better it is for your credit score because it proves you're worthy and reliable to have credit. So if you have an account, don't close it unless it's absolutely necessary.
Wait, hold on, bro. I didn't even know that. I actually closed down my Chase account last year because I thought it was best not to have too many cards. But man, if you're being responsible with them cards, then keep that joint open as long as possible. Keep that positive account on your credit report.
Yeah, this account also amounts to about 15% of your credit score. Now, your account mix, that's about 10% of your credit score. This includes revolving debt, which is like credit cards, and installment debt is like mortgage and loans. Also, credit inquiries have an impact on your credit score as well.
So your credit score takes a hit just for checking it?
Yes, sir. There are two types of inquiries, hard and soft. Hard inquiries are the ones that show up on your credit report, so try to limit them as much as possible.
So wait, where do they pull these hard inquiries, and are they necessary?
So the main places that'll pull hard inquiries on your credit are banks and credit bureaus. A hard inquiry stays on your credit report for up to 2 years, so be sure that you're allowing them to do a hard inquiry for a beneficial reason, because it'll most likely hurt your credit score. And to answer your question, bro, no, you can't avoid hard pulls if you're applying for credit anyways. But son, I think we gave him a pretty good intro to credit, man. Don't we got Credit Sheldon on the show today?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, my dog is ready to drop some important knowledge on us about credit. Let's take a quick break with our sponsor, GuapCoin, and we're going to be right back to you. This episode of FY Fly is being brought to you by GuapCoin. GuapCoin is a decentralized digital coin founded by people of color that can be traded between peers instantly. GuapCoin is fast, secure, and highly scalable. Now, GuapCoin is for everybody, but their primary mission is to uplift those economic communities that have been left out of the cryptocurrency revolution. For more information, visit guapcoin.org or email tevans@guapcoin.com. DM us a question at FYFly on Instagram or Facebook for your chance to win 100 guap coins. We will be choosing 4 lucky winners to receive 100 guap coins apiece. Stay safe, stay invested, and stay guapped up. What's up, guys? We're back with our insightful interview segment. We have the credit guru himself, Mr. Credit Sheldon. How you feeling, man? How you feeling?
What's going on? What's going on? Feeling good.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We're excited to have you, man, here on FY Fly. We don't like to waste no time, so we're going to jump right into our 10 icebreaker questions. You ready?
Let's get it.
All right. Chicken or beef?
Chicken.
Carrots or broccoli?
Broccoli.
Sprite or Pepsi?
Sprite.
I know the answer to this one. Football or basketball?
Football.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Hip-hop or R&B?
Ooh, I go with hip-hop.
Okay, okay. Netflix or a good book?
Netflix.
Empire or Power?
Power.
Michael Jackson or Prince?
Michael Jackson.
So if you had one superpower, it would be invisible or a mind reader?
I'll go with mind reader.
So why would you be a mind reader?
When you're a mind reader, you know, you literally know what people are thinking. Even if they don't know, you know what they're thinking. So you can literally just, you know, it's something hard to explain, but when you're invisible, really you can just run around and do what you want to, but you know, there's no value to that. That's gonna get old. But if you can run around and be right in front of people and know exactly what they're thinking, you know, you can be one up from it at all times. You can one up at all times. Yeah.
That's big facts, bro. That's big facts.
For sure.
So man, I noticed that you play football, bro. So I always say that sports and business goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
Do you agree? What you think?
Oh no, I totally agree. I think that sports, not necessarily only college sports, but even if you played a sport when you were, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, when you play a sport, it creates discipline. It basically shows you how to finish something. It shows you the discipline aspect of things, the consistency, just the ability to finish, you know. And I feel like, you know, a lot of athletes also, they have that camaraderie because they were a part of a team for the most part, not all athletes. So yeah, most definitely, I think that's a true statement.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So what was it like starting your actual business, Money the Millennial Way? Tell us about that.
Yeah. So starting that business, what it was is I graduated from college. I got my master's degree in business. And what I noticed was that basically I found a problem And I found that I could be the solution. The problem was that a lot of millennials or younger people at that time, even older people, they didn't know much about personal finance, investing, credit, whatever the case may be. And I felt like there was a gap there, and I feel like I can close that gap. So what I did was I created a my first business was Money the Millennial Way, which is an educational slash information platform where I teach other generations, especially millennials, how to invest, you know, on a one-on-one beginner level, how to budget, basically all about personal finance, how to understand the personal finance. And, you know, that's basically how it started. I just seen that there was a big gap where people didn't really know what they were doing or they weren't interested. And I just wanted to show and teach everybody how to do those basic, you know, fundamental personal finance things.
Man, I'm so glad we got you here on the show, man. This is going to be a great one.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're going to get right into it, man. Single stocks or ETF?
So, I mean, that's a broad question. So if you're a beginner or even intermediate, I recommend ETFs, which is exchange traded funds. But for myself, I do a little bit of both.
Tell us more about the beginner brokerage apps you use and things like that you use to just jump right in.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a ton of apps out there. But if you're looking for user friendliness, I know a lot of beginners, or if you are a little bit younger and you're on your phone a lot, you can use Robinhood. Robinhood's a cool app. Basically, it's zero fees when you're investing with them. It's like I said, they have a mobile application, so you can do it on the go, and it's very user friendly. Now, if you are looking for more of an educational platform that's, you know, that has a lot of capabilities and functionalities, you can go with somebody like Fidelity or Charles Schwab.
And also, when that FY Fly app comes out, you can also go ahead and learn about financial literacy and investing on that as well.
Most definitely. Tune in.
Yes, sir. So, in your opinion, what's the most important lesson you've learned about investing?
So, the most important lesson is you can't be emotional. And also, you always want to invest for the long term. So, I know a lot of people, they see a lot of ads on Instagram saying how they made a lot of money day trading and so forth. Day trading is a very dangerous game. Investing in penny stocks are a very dangerous game. So, you want to make sure you're investing in companies that have proven success over a long term period. 10 plus years. And as long as you stick to diversifying your investments, you stick to a long-term investment and you're not emotional, meaning you're not buying and selling really quick. As soon as the stock goes down or up, then you'll be successful in the stock game.
So I heard you say something about day trading and penny stocks.
Yeah.
Why are those so risky?
So those are so risky because, for one, when you're looking at penny stocks, they have something called pump and dump. So what that means is that you have these analysts, or you have these, you know, rich people that gas up a stock, right? So they basically gas up a stock on all the social media, Twitter, Instagram, jump into the stock. And then what they would do is they'll sell when the stock gets to a certain point. So penny stocks are very dangerous as well, because they have a low volume, meaning that there's not a lot of investors that are buying their stock. So it's going to be hard to sell the stock when it's time to sell the stock. So you always want to focus on, like I said, larger companies. If you're a beginner, you always want to focus on larger companies that have proven success, not a penny stock that has low volume, a low amount of investors, where it's going to be hard for you to sell your investment. And it's just a high possibility or probability that you'll lose money opposed to winning money if you don't know what you're doing.
So one of the main things I really want to, you know, start locking in for myself is passive income. How can we make money in our sleep? Can you tell us more about that?
Oh, man, there's a lot of ways. But so, I mean, one of the main ways is, of course, you start a business. You start a small business where you're hands off, meaning that you have systems and processes in place where the business can run in your sleep. So say, for instance, you have an e-commerce business where you're selling T-shirts. Essentially, they have something called shipping on demand, or on demand businesses, where you don't actually have to front the cost for the T-shirts up front. You literally can create a store on Shopify or your own online platform. And from there, you can list shirts for different prices. So at that point, people can buy your shirts while you're not online. There's no handholding. People can buy your shirts. And then from there, what you do is you reach out to your shipping on demand company. So you use their money that they paid you with to buy the shirt. You don't need any money up front to start that business. So that's very passive, because really they're buying your shirt without you having to walk them through it. And then from there, once they buy the shirt, the printing on demand company can ship it directly to them with their money that they use opposed to your money. So that's one way. A second way is you can jump into the ATM business or vending machine business. So that's semi-passive. So the only thing you have to do there is, with ATMs, it's a lot more easier, because the only thing you have to do is fill up the ATMs when the money gets low. But outside of that, people are using your ATM which is, you know, people are using your ATM and whether it's malls, outlets, barbershops, clubs, whatever the case may be, and you don't have to be there. You're making money off of every transaction. So that's a semi-passive where you don't have to be there, but you do have to fill up the ATM. So that's easy. And then you have e-commerce, which is like these days what's been big is Shopify stores and Amazon stores where people are opening up their own Amazon stores and they're doing something called drop shipping. So there's a lot of different models you can do to create passive income and then also invest in dividends, investing in stocks that pay dividends where a dividend essentially is where you get that guaranteed payment from the company. And basically they're just thanking you for owning them as a shareholder. So it's called profit sharing where you get a percentage of the company's profits every quarter or every month or whatever the case may be. And that's guaranteed money that you get. So those are a couple of different ways you can make some passive income for yourself.
Okay. Okay. I like that. So I'm going to read you off two quotes and you tell me which quote is more accurate in your opinion. Money can't buy happiness and more money, more problems.
Man, so I'm not a big advocate of money can't buy happiness. I feel like I've never met a broke person that was that was super happy, me personally. So I would have to go with the more money, more problems, I think is more accurate.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are some tips or rules about paying your credit card off, you know, because me personally growing up, I've always heard that, you know, credit cards are something that we should avoid.
Yeah.
So talk to us more about that.
Yeah. So that's just misinformation. So that's what we learn all throughout school. And realistically, it may sound bad, but that's really a broke person's mindset or, you know, middle class mindset. That's what we learn from schools, that credit is bad. Credit is actually good as long as you're responsible. A lot of small business owners or even large businesses are not even using their own money for their businesses. They're using OPM, which is called other people's money. And what they're using is credit. They're using a bank's money. So as long as you're not paying interest, then you're good. Credit only becomes bad when you're paying high interest. But if you're paying no interest or you're paying very low interest and your business is making more than what the credit can do for you, then credit's always good. And then also you think about it like this, right? Say you're using a debit card. Using a debit card for everything that you have, you're using cash. You're getting no positive impact or no positive benefit from that. Now, say you have a credit card where you're getting anywhere between 1% to 5% back on every purchase. So now you're making money, like you're getting a rebate for all your purchases. And say you use it on everyday spending, gas, groceries, you know, little basic things. By the end of the year, you made $1,000 back from all the money you spent opposed to using your debit card or cash and not making no money back. So you got to look at it like from that point of view, just being responsible, paying it off in full by the statement date every month, opposed to, you know, thinking like credit is bad. You just got to be responsible with it.
Gotcha. So how does bad credit affect you? And what are some tips of getting out of, you know, that bad credit relationship?
For sure, man. Yeah. So happy you asked that because it's a big phenomenon that we see on a day-to-day basis. But bad credit can affect you a lot of ways. You can't get a car. And if you do get a car, you're going to have a 40% interest rate, which you don't want that because then your $20,000 car is going to be worth 40. Basically, you spent $40,000 by the end of your 5 or 6 year term.
Mm.
It's hard to rent an apartment. You're not going to be able to buy a home. You're not going to be able to get approved for a credit card. And if you have a small business or a business in general, you're not going to be able to get approved for any type of business funding through the banks. So those are like some key ways that negative credit or bad credit can negatively impact you.
And what are some ways that we could, you know, get out of that bad credit relationship?
Yeah. So there's a couple of different ways. The first thing that I see on people's credit reports is that their credit cards are maxed out. So when you're looking at credit is broken down to 5 different categories. You have payment history, which is 35% of your credit, which is the first category. The second category is credit utilization, which is 30% of your credit score. So when you're looking at it, you just need to make all your payments on time. Even if it's the minimum payment, make all your payments on time. But in the best ideal situation, you want to make sure that you're paying your cards off in full every month. Because the problem is that people are paying the minimum payments, $20 here, $20 there. But the interest is so high that it's growing at a higher rate than what they're paying. So their credit card balances are never dropping. So if you pay your credit card balances down to zero, you make 100% payments on time, I guarantee you that you'll be at least in the mid 600s if you follow that rule. Now, after that, if you have negative things such as collections and so forth, you will have to get those deleted. Never pay collections. You'll get those deleted. You can either learn on your own by going on YouTube. And if that doesn't work out, you can work with a credit repair company such as ourselves.
So give us some positive money habits that you do personally. And do you have any negative that you could cut off and we should avoid?
Yeah. So positive money habits. I'm very strict on my spending. So I do follow a budget. I use an app called Mint and Personal Capital. So Personal Capital and Mint, those are two personal finance apps where it allows you to make the budget in the application. you attach your credit cards and debit cards and everything to it. So it does, it's not going to work well if you use a lot of cash, but use debit cards and credit cards, it works well because it tracks all your spending. It automatically funds your money over to the certain category of the budget. It'll send you a text or email notification when you're over that budget. So I'll follow that to like a T. And when I create my budget, I always do worst case scenario. I never do best case scenario. So if we're looking at, say, for instance, for groceries, I know I only spend, let's say, $300 a month. I'm going to put in the budget $400 a month to give myself that little room for error there. So that my budget is always going to be worst case scenario. So that's like some good money habits that I follow. And that's what's helped me out a lot as well. And then automation as well. Automation meaning take out human error, because if you're trying, if you have a savings goal or you want to invest for retirement or whatever the case may be, a lot of times what humans have a mistake doing is they say to themselves, hey, I'm going to invest $200 a month. But what happens is if they don't automate it, meaning they don't have automatic deductions taken out of their checkings, something's going to come up. Oh, I want to go on this vacation this month, so I'm not going to take that $200 out this month. Or, you know, something like that. So you want to automate your finances. And those are some positives. Some negatives would say, I don't have really any negative money habits because I've been disciplined, you know, and I'm really a money guy. But a lot of money habits is if you don't have the money, don't use it. So meaning if you don't have the physical cash or the money in your checking account, don't use your credit card. So don't use money you don't have. That'll be the biggest negative thing that I would tell people to stop doing.
Well, I'm glad you said something about, you know, automating, you know, your savings and things like that. And that was honestly a big thing that I wanted to have incorporated into my app. I wanted to make sure that the users of my app could, like you said, automate their savings, because things come up and things are always, you know, it's a new expense here, new expense here, new expense here. But if you're just getting that money and you forget about it, just like an investment, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know, for me personally, for my investments, it's best when I invest into things and I forget about them. And then I look, you know, 6 months or a year later or a year and a half later, and it's gone up, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7%, you know what I'm saying? You know, so that's just a great thing there.
Yep, totally agree.
So in your opinion, man, do you believe college is needed to be successful in life?
No, not in this day and age. So maybe, you know, 5, 10, you know, 20 years ago. But now actually a lot of companies, what they're saying is they're okay to with swapping high value skills for college. So say you have a high skill of coding and you never went to college, but you learned coding in some course or something like that. They will literally hire you and almost value you more because you learn in college, right? But a lot of college is just really just being consistent, showing that you have the discipline to finish through something, showing that you are resilient, you know, and so forth. But you're going to learn the most by hands-on training, right? So when you usually get your first job, you have to go through hands-on training. You don't get your first job knowing what you're doing. So I think these days you don't need college. I do think that you need a demand-based skill. So demand-based skill meaning, even through a recession, your services are still needed. So things such as taxes, everybody got to get their taxes done. Things such as credit, everybody has credit. Everybody needs credit. Things such as accounting, everybody needs an accountant. So, you know, those need-based businesses, I think, are going to be, if you opt out of college, you need to learn a skill that is a need-based business. No matter what happens, they still need you as a skills person.
Yes, sir. That's some great advice right there. That's some great advice.
Yep.
So now let's switch over to, you know, retirement and 401k, because a lot of people are not too, you know, knowledgeable about these things. And, you know, people are literally giving, you know, matching and giving free money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So just tell us, why is it beneficial being knowledgeable about 401k and your retirement options?
Yeah. So there's pros and cons of 401ks, but for the average person that's not into entrepreneurship or that's not really into investing, 401ks is a major benefit, especially if your company has a company match. So the reason why 401ks are so beneficial is because, for one, it automates your investing. So what happens is you get paid, and before you see your check, the money is already invested into your 401k. So you get used to seeing a certain dollar amount, and you think that's how much you get paid, but really you get paid more, but the other money went to your 401k. So it automates it automatically before you even see your money. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that depending on what type of 401k you get, it's a tax break, right? So you're not paying taxes on the money now, you're paying taxes on the money later. And then last but not least, it's free money out there that you're leaving on the table if your company has a company match of, say, you know, 3 to 10% and you're not investing. So anytime your company has a 401k or something with a company match, you should always at least invest the minimum amount to get the company match, because when that money starts compounding and you leave it in that 401k or investment for, you know, 20, 30 years while you're working, that extra 4% is going to be literally like an extra $100,000 you're leaving on the table in a 20 to 30 year period. So.
Okay. Makes sense. So can you explain the difference between an individual retirement account, an IRA, and a Roth IRA?
Yeah. So the IRA, individual retirement account, basically just means that you're paying taxes on the back end. So you're getting a tax break now and you're paying taxes when you retire. And then the Roth IRA, which is the Roth individual retirement account, basically you're paying taxes up front so you don't have to pay taxes when you retire. So that's the biggest difference between the two. They both have their pros and their cons, and you know, their strategies for both, but they're still both a good thing. I mean, I recommend, you know, if you don't have a retirement account at work, I recommend opening up IRA or a Roth IRA immediately with a broker or your bank or whatever the case may be.
So how much money do you advise that we should be saving and why?
So that's a large question. The reason I say that is because I am not a big believer in the bank. So when you're looking at the banks, a lot of people think is, hey, I'm gonna save this money. I'm putting it in my savings account. I did what I was supposed to do. I saved my first $5,000, $1,000, $500, $300, whatever the case may be. But the problem is that the banks pay you so low interest. Most banks are paying you in between 0.01% in interest to 0.03% in interest. So if you're looking at inflation, which like, I don't want to get too technical, but inflation is basically the price, it's the value of the dollar going up. Inflation grows at 2% each year for the most part. So you want to make sure your investment or your money is at least growing with 2% each year. And if your money's not growing with 2% each year, your money's losing value. So what you want to do is instead of saving that money into your savings account, you can save it into something called a high yield savings account, where instead of you getting a 0.01% interest, you'll get 1-3% interest and there's still no risk. So if you are going to save, I recommend you saving it in a vehicle that can at least gain some interest that can kind of keep up with inflation.
Okay. Could you explain more about those vehicles, like the money market accounts and the CDs and things like that?
So yeah, you have a CD, right? So a CD is certificate of deposit. A CD is good for people that want to invest their money, but it's low risk, right? So this is a banking product. This is not usually an investment product. It's more of a banking product. So the bank is basically borrowing your money. So you're locked into a maturity date, right? So when you get a CD, they'll say, hey, you need to keep your money in this certificate of deposit, this CD, for 2 years. If you keep this money in this CD for 2 years, we will give you 4% interest on your money. So that's basically the bank borrowing your money and then the bank paying you back within 2 years and paying you interest on your money. So that's a good way to invest if you're scared, you really don't know what, you're really not educated on the stock market yet, but you want your money to make money. So that's the first option. You have a high yield savings account, because the negative thing with that option, you can't touch your money. So if you need it, you can't touch it. And if you do touch it, there's a high penalty. So the safest option is something called a high yield savings account, where it's the same thing as a normal savings account. It's just a high yield, meaning that they're going to pay you a higher interest rate. So most banks that have the high yield savings accounts are going to be online banks, because they don't have a lot of brick and mortar locations. So they have more money to invest into their customers. You have the money market accounts. It's very similar as well. These are all vehicles where you're going to make a small percentage back on your money, but it's going to be more than a savings account. So yeah, you have your CDs, your money market accounts, you have your high yield savings accounts, you have your bonds. Those are all lower risk investments, where you're not going to make as much, but you're going to make something.
So what do you feel like you should have been taught in school that you learned in adult life?
I think basically just your day-to-day finance stuff, you know, your personal finance, your credit, your accounting. Also, entrepreneurship is big. Growing up, I never wanted to be an entrepreneur. It wasn't until I graduated grad school where I found, you know, I started doing more research. But I think that we're just taught and essentially brainwashed to, hey, go to school, go to college, get a good job, work that job for 30, 40 years until you retire, you know, retire off of $1 million. And then, you know, those basic things. But I think that schools these days should change the curriculum and teach kids how to invest, teach kids about credit, teach people about entrepreneurship, teach people about personal finance, et cetera. So.
Yeah, I definitely agree. These schools are, you know, teaching us how to become an employee.
Exactly.
And with that being said, do you feel like an employee can become financially free?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. There's a lot of so there's something called the FIRE movement. It stands for financial independence, retire early. So there's ways you could become financially free at an early age, you know, in your 30s and so forth. You just have to be super disciplined and you have to have a high savings rate. So you have to be investing 70-80% of your income. And when you live in a city such as I live in San Diego, California, so the cost of living here is so expensive, it's very difficult for people to invest and save 70% of their income. Or you could do it the traditional way where you start off very young. You know, you work a job, you start off very young, you know, say 21, 22, 23 years old, and you start investing. You know, if you start investing in a 401k that young, you can contribute a smaller dollar amount, and then you can do that for 20, 30 years, and you should have $1 million as long as the market is returning an average of, you know, 7 to 8%. So that's the way to get out that way.
So how early did you start saving for retirement?
As soon as I got my got out of college and I got my first like full-time job, I started saving in the 401k as soon as I was eligible. So I think it was after 6 months. I think I was what, 22 at that time? 21 or 22, I believe 22. Yeah, as soon as I was able to invest in the 401k, that's where I started. And I did that, and I, you know, every year I just increased my contribution. So I started off at like 4%, then I went to 10%, and I got as high as like 40% of my, basically I was saving 40 to 50% of my money at one point.
So what was your best investment that provided the biggest ROI or return on investment?
At this point in time, my business has returned the most ROI for me personally. You know, just investing in myself, investing in my colleagues and my business partners. And, you know, I've made way more money investing in my own business and doing that than anything. But outside of that, I would say the stock market, you know, like I said, since I know what I'm doing, I invest in individual stocks as well. So Apple has been my biggest, I'm not saying you should go out and buy that, but Apple has, I made the most money with Apple out of all the stocks in the stock market at this time.
So last question, leave us with some general advice for young people.
Yeah. So general advice for young people is, you know, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. You know, stay consistent, and whatever your dreams there are, you know, you can be successful. Now, if you, like I said, this is not only for entrepreneurship, you just always have to stay the course. So meaning, you know, even through hard times, there's going to be a lot of adversity. You're going to have to deal with adversity. You're going to have to fight through adversity. You're going to have to overcome adversity. As long as you're able to do those things, you should be able to be successful as long as you can push through that adversity.
Big facts, big facts. Well, I appreciate your time, man. Thanks for joining us on the FY Fly podcast. Let the audience know where to reach you. Any final words, boss? Go ahead.
Yeah, you can reach me on Instagram at Credit Sheldon, or our other Instagram is at Lifestyle Credit Repair, or at Money the Millennial Way. We have several websites. If you go on our Instagram platforms, you'll see our websites and so forth. So you can click the links in our bios and go to any of our websites, moneythemillennialway.com. If you need personal finance help or just education, Lifestyle Credit Repair, if you need your credit repair. And then we have the creditmillennial.com, which is for the travel hacking and credit hacking if you want to learn how to travel for free. Appreciate you having me.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now we're going to take it back to Remy G and I for one of our favorite segments in the show called Did You Know? Let's do it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Welcome back to FY Fly the Podcast. Me and Remy G about to hit y'all with some cold hard facts about credit. You ready, General?
Let's get it.
Yes, sir. Did you know 56% of Americans have no idea what their credit score is?
Did you know the total owed by an average U.S. household with this debt is around $137,000?
Did you know as of August 20th, the average credit card interest rate is 16.3%?
Did you know the average American homeowner owes roughly $150,000 in mortgage loans?
Did you know California and Hawaii homeowners owe an average of $300,000 in mortgage loans?
Did you know that you can dispute items on your credit score?
So y'all know we always want to leave y'all with some important takeaways. So make sure when dealing with credit or OPM, other people's money, that the number one goal is to produce income generating assets.
That's simple. Don't borrow money to spend on things that won't generate any revenue. Credit is okay, as long as you're using it responsibly. Going forward, I want everybody listening to this podcast today to be more mindful about their credit so that they're able to raise it.
Do your own research, formulate, and make a plan, and get to it, boy. I don't know, man. Maybe it's just me, but I want things to be easy as possible. Life is already hard from the things we can't control, so why not simplify things that we can control? Control the controllables. Shout out Coach Hayes, Coach Cart, and Coach Emery. That's it. Stay safe.
Stay invested.
Stay fly.
Thank you all for listening to FY Fly the Podcast, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for more financial literacy insights with our special guest. Please visit our website, social media platforms, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at FYI Fly Podcast. That's FYI FLI Podcast.
But don't y'all go nowhere just yet. Stay tuned as each week here on FYI Fly, we like to give an independent artist a place to shine and gain some exposure. This week we have Trials and Tribulations by Goldmouth KB.
See y'all next week. Stay fly. Just like my treasure.
I know I smile through the pain, I need some healing. I pray to God, just please, just take this feeling. I just be going through things, I need some fixing. Hope you can feel my pain. And I...
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.